This is a previously recorded episode.
Hey, hey, everyone out there in Metalland, get those quarters lined up because it's time for another hour of the Metal Jukebox here on PodcastDetroit.com. I'll be bringing you a geek-filled hour of all things metal, including news, show reviews, history, guests, and most importantly, heavy metal music. I'm your host, Jer Walker. Thanks for joining me tonight. The Metal Jukebox is part of the PodcastDetroit.com network, broadcasting from High Top Activate Gaming in Ferndale, Michigan. Tonight, once again, drinking that cold, delicious Angry Beaver from Falling Down Beer Company. Be nice to Honey Bun at home. You don't want to go home to an Angry Beaver. Visit Falling Down on 10 Mile and Warren and get a buck off your first pint if you mention PodcastDetroit.com. Whoo! Tonight, very, very special topic. I've been waiting to do this one for a long time. Nearly had to bribe the guy to get in here and do this, damn it. But we're here, and we're ready, and we're going to roll it. Tonight's topic is one Glenn Allen Anzalone, also known as Danzig. Joining me tonight, very, very special guest, that evil dude from Flash Gordon.
How you doing tonight, Jer?
Evil dude, what's happening, man?
Good, good. Really happy to be on here tonight.
Thanks for finally making it. Appreciate it. Also, kind of a secret guest as well. I don't know if he's actually going to say anything tonight, but we got Little Evil Dude.
What's up?
Thank you, Little Evil Dude. I appreciate that. So
someone's got to take over the throne at some point.
Well, we're not here forever, are we?
That's right. That's right. And if I'm going to leave anything, it'll be to him.
One of the reasons why I've been wanting to do this episode is because you and I have often debated, not necessarily about Danzig, but you call me on certain things. Hey, is this band metal? No, they're hard rock. You know, is this band metal? Nah, whatever. You know, there's all these different sub-genres of music, and you just take the metal, heavy metal genre as a whole, and you can break it down into a billion different ways. And, I've had a lot of guests on here that, for the most part, I think, they don't like the genres. They just like, dude, if it's good, it's good. It doesn't need to, be put into a box anywhere. And, frankly, I think, Danzig's one of those I've flip-flopped on over the years. I'm like, he's not metal. No, he's metal. He's metal. He's not metal. I mean, I think finally after, discussing with you behind the scenes, you have to come to the realization that, maybe not all of his music would be considered metal, but goddamn it, that dude has had a major influence on guys that are into metal.
Well, the real interesting thing that I find about Danzig is that, he started out as, as death punk, and it definitely didn't start out as a metal band where so many bands want to be a metal band right from the get-go. The transition from the Misfits to Samhain to Danzig to what he's doing now was a natural transition. Whether he was in the beginning, I don't think he was. I think it's just kind of where he ended up, and he's constantly doing a lot of different things. There's a lot of stuff that people don't realize that he's done in the past. Everything from a lot of the soundtracks he's done for movies and the people that he's worked with.
Soundtrack work is very good. In fact, we'll probably play one of those songs that he's done in the past, which is different. And what I liked about our pre-show discussion is you didn't necessarily want to go for the quick, easy, okay, everybody knows these songs. We're kind of going for the deep tracks, the different things that he's done out there that really do illustrate his diversity as a musician. When you start really learning more about the man. I mean, he grew up, learned how to play piano and clarinet, and, Danzig's at an age, heavy metal wasn't really invented, at the time he was growing up. So, people got to remember he came up in that era where there wasn't metal and he came up with what he came up with. And that's how we all have our influences to how we got here today. And I always say, because there's a group of people out there who love to poo-poo hair metal. But you know what? Without hair metal, you don't get to where we're at in music today. And I know, you got here in a very different way than I did.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we all like the kind of the same things.
And what I found was really neat about his music was even in the beginning, it was all different. Everything he did as he made his step towards closer and closer to the metal period, it was different. Everything was different. And it brought, for me as a kid growing up in the 80s, it all took me to a different spot. you know, every band that he did. It put me in a different mindset and put me in a different feeling of what the music really was.
Yeah, and he has had several projects over the years, some which I think people wish were still, you know, there in, you know, a modern capacity. But, you know, I mean, when you start the Misfits in the 70s, for God's sake, I mean, that's yeah. going back. That's a long history in music in a way that's out there to the masses.
Yeah, and in the way that the band was, it was very unique. It wasn't your typical punk rock anarchist type, you know, punk rock band. I mean,
right.
it was neat the way it was, you know, formulated to what it was. And I don't think a lot of people know what the history was and how he did it. You know, which is humorous.
It is humorous, and to in fact that early on, you know, the Misfits were different. You know, they weren't like everyone else out there, to the point where, you know, Glenn was trying to get the Misfits signed to several record labels, and they all told him, "Yeah, no way, you're never going to have a career in music." Yeah. And now look, you know, where the guy is.
I know you can buy everything from socks to clothing at Odd Topic with Misfits logo on it. People, the Grim Skull is synonymous with that time period of music, you know.
It's so funny you mentioned that, because I don't know if many people know this, but he was actually in a lawsuit with Jerry Only over that very subject, the use of the trademark and the logos and everything in the stores like Hot Topic.
Yes.
You know, because that was done behind Glenn's back. He didn't sign off on it, and unfortunately for Danzig, he lost that battle in court.
He lost that battle.
Yeah, which is, I don't know the intricacies of the ruling and why they came to that conclusion, but that's why you actually do see those
items. Well, I'm sure Jerry profited very well on that.
Well, probably the reason as well that Glenn decided to file the lawsuit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you know, that label had been put on everything from snowboarding gloves to stickers from products that don't even have anything relation to that band.
Right.
You know, and I think at that point in time, I started using all those t-shirts for rags, because I just couldn't fully come to grips with knowing that the 10-year-old girl that lived four houses down is going to the middle school with a Misfits t-shirt on. I felt really, really.
You were keeping it real.
I felt really lost at that point in time. I'm like, you know what? I think it's done.
Well, it is really unique when you see a turd like Justin Bieber go out and he does a show in public and he's got, you know, some heavy metal shirt on, or you know, one of the Jenners or Kardashians is wearing a heavy metal shirt.
I will
shirt.
Go back into the closet and like my music and just let it go at that.
They have no idea who any of these bands are.
No,
you know,
no.
They just like, it's cool. You know, whatever. So Glenn's been around and he's done a lot of good things. And the Misfits obviously had a very massive impact, and not just in metal, but in a variety of genres of music, which, you know, really goes to show the lasting impact, you know, to this day that it has. You know, Glenn also not a dummy. You know, early on he knew, you know, the way the music business was going to work. He started releasing, you know, the band's records through his own label. You know, I don't need you guys. You guys think I don't have a career in music.
Yeah,
I'm going to do this myself.
Was it Blank? And then it went to Plan 9.
Exactly.
And the interesting thing about, what if you're a diehard Misfits fan, you'll know that the Plan 9 label was actually a title to a movie called Plan 9 from Outer Space, starred Vampira and Tor Johnson, which were – Vampira was one of his songs.
Right.
And that exact title, Plan 9, was the entry to that movie. I think it was made back in the late 50s.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, what I did like about the Misfits is just the imagery, you know, the camp horror imagery and the lyrics and
all the colors. The colors,
right.
Everything pulled together. You know,
right.
It was all that B-rated horror film
right.
of the late 50s and
Love
the aliens and Night of the Living Dead. All they had to do was take stills from movies and hang that Misfits logo on it, and it sold. It was cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to the point they kind of just turned themselves into a faster, heavier version of the Ramones, you know, style kind of punk with a rockabilly, you know, type sound. And I think Glenn's voice in particular complemented that. He's rather unique as a vocalist and the style that he sings in. You know, it's funny, you've ever heard, you know, people say, oh, he's the, you know,
he's the dark Jim Morrison.
Right, exactly.
He's dark Jim Morrison, you know, and he really knew how to market himself at that time period, because he had the Fiend Club, where you could send in $3 or $4 and get a 12-inch or get a sticker pack that called the Fiend Club, and that was really limited.
Right.
You know, and I saw a really neat video. I was too young and naive at the time to go to this concert. I think it was at the Greystone in Detroit here back in maybe 82 or 83, and it was on a public broadcasting station, and he had said, you know, he came over, they said, you know, we're starting the Fiend Club. He goes, you know, he's send us your skulls. Anything you got, your mother, your brother, your father, your skulls. And you know what? And like instantly he made the skull thing really cool. And that was the gimmick, the shtick. And you would get stickers and CDs.
I hope this guy's listening, but I've got a good friend in the metal scene and he doesn't live too far from here, but G Rizzy. He's got a sweet battle vest, and on the back he's got the big fiend skull on it. And, you know, it's like, I mean, that's
yeah, I rocked
iconic,
one of those for a
man.
Short time, but I was much too old to be doing it. I just probably should have put it away a long time ago.
I don't know. Not so fast. You should come to a metal show these days, man. You know, there's still some pretty sweet battle vests getting rocked out there, and I'm not messing with those guys.
I think I took an old varsity coat and covered up the varsity team on the back and did it that way. Closest thing I could get.
Well, unfortunately, October 83, you know, it basically saw the demise of the Misfits, which you know, I guess in hindsight, maybe was a good thing, you know, because if that doesn't happen, you don't get Samhain. You don't get Danzig. You don't get everything else that comes with it. You know what I mean? So,
well, you get what you almost got now, and it's not a disrespect to Jerry Only. You get the Misfits now. It's really
right.
It's good for the, I guess, you know what, it's introducing, you know, my kids or your grandkids to it now, but it's not the same.
Yeah, for us old school bastards, it's just right. It's not the same at all.
It's now it's silly.
Yeah, and you know,
because the guy really looks dead now. I mean, it's not a disrespect to Jerry, but that dude really looks dead and painted white.
It makes me wonder if they just got Keith Richards up there.
Yeah, man, be a good ad.
Right, he'd fit right in.
He'd fit right in.
So you know, Danzig disbanded the Misfits due to increasing animosity among the band members. You know, and what I do like, and I applaud him for was his also dissatisfaction with their musical abilities. So he was a guy who was always wanting to take it to the next step and move forward, you know, especially on the talent side. He didn't want it to just be a B-grade horror film.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to be better.
They went through some band members, especially the drummer. I know the drummer, they went through a couple of them. In fact, even on one of their live albums, you can hear the anger in Glenn's voice. I think the drummer was Robo.
Ties to Black Flag.
Yeah.
A lot of ties to Black Flag with Glenn and all of his projects.
Yeah. So there was a lot of animosity there when they finally broke up.
It sounded like from everything that I've learned that, you know, he didn't feel like that they were putting in the hours. They weren't practicing enough. And you know, again, was wanting to move things forward and they just weren't on the same page with him. I think for them is just more kind of this let's just hang out, have fun kind of a thing. And, you know, I think Glenn wanted to make it a business.
Yeah, and he was talented too. He could play multiple instruments and stuff, and he saw potential that probably, you know what, it wasn't going anywhere and it was time to go on.
Yeah, speaking of that, I mean, he taught himself how to play guitar. You know, he's done a lot of things. You know, we won't play any of it, but the Black Araya stuff, that's all him.
You know, and that was number one on the Billboard charts.
Isn't that crazy?
When it went out, it was number one on the classical Billboard charts.
That's nuts.
You know, and you hear it, and it's so befitting to him. You could tell that it was definitely something that, wow, that's, you know, there's a lot of talent in that music coming from a guy who was just, you know, asking for skulls.
And I just read something today, actually, in regards to that project that he did. And I actually got it out of the Sound of the Beast, The Complete Headbanging History of Heavy Metal by Ian Christie. If you're a fan of metal, you got to read this. But if you really want to know your stuff, I mean, this is the Bible as far as a heavy metal.
I don't think you
lessons.
Could call yourself a metalhead without one. So I'm not officially calling myself a metalhead because I've never held that book in my hands. But I'm going to do it today before we leave.
But you know, he did say, Danzig, in regards to Black Araya, he's like, you've got to hear it in your head. And you're not just hearing the drums, the bass guitar, and vocals. He said, I'm hearing every single little part, you know, this thing, that thing. And it's complex, you know, keyboard, real people, backup singers, gongs, you know, every sound that you heard on that record, he heard it in his head prior to, you know, creating the music.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that just, I guess, kind of goes to show you the kind of musician he is and how he, you know, operates, you know, because I have guys on and, you know, and I'm always picking their brain, you know, what's your process and how do you come up with it? And you know, everybody's a little bit different. You know, Glenn's one of those guys. That's all in my head, man.
It's there. It's there. You
right.
Know,
exactly.
You're not picking for it.
All right. Well, let's get into a track now. Let's play Hybrid Moments by the Misfits and we'll come back and we'll talk about more Glenn Danzig.
Baby, when you
Welcome back to the Metal Jukebox on PodcastDetroit.com. That was Hybrid Moments by the Misfits off the Legacy of Brutality record, which is, I think, one of their later releases, right, prior to their demise.
You almost can tell it because it sounds a little more orchestrated, a lot more smoother than some of their other music.
So that really goes along to what I was just saying about, you know, Glenn wanting to take the band in a different direction. And you can actually hear it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound rough and edgy.
Right.
Like some of the other stuff. And then I think that whole album sounded like that. Everything flowed really good. Each song had a good flow to it.
I think that song, just in general, for me, anyways, just has a good groove.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's a good cruising type song. Yeah, it is. It's a good cruising song. I get that feel. I don't necessarily feel that want to go walk around a graveyard feeling that I get with a lot of the other stuff. I get that more like just like, you know what, I'm kind of in love, you know, maybe in love with the dead, but I'm not digging them up. Yeah.
You're having a good time with
it. I'm having a good time with it.
That's right. So thanks for choosing that, because that's a good one that – I don't think has gotten a lot of airplay.
No, many a nights I was in my car driving down the expressway listening to that. Probably going to this guy's house.
Right. So after the Misfits, Glenn wants to go in a different direction. So he decides, all right, this is the direction I'm going in. And before long, he began work on a new project called Samhain, which obviously, in my opinion, was a very different direction from what he was doing with the Misfits. As an outsider looking in, am I far off?
No, you're absolutely right. It went almost from the 50s B-rated movies to the occult and, right, you know, in the fall, everything changing and things dying. And it had this really hollow, darker sound, I think. You know, there was a lot of tribal drum beats and real heaviness. His vocals on a lot of tracks were almost secondary behind the music, which I found really cool about that stuff.
Yeah, and I think – I wonder how much of that was, you know, because this is when he hooked up with Erie Vaughn.
Who was a very talented bass player.
Right,
I mean,
absolutely.
He'd already been in a number of bands prior to working with Glenn.
Yeah, I think he was a pretty big influence on Glenn and then on what became the Samhain sound.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people like to poke fun at bass players that they don't do a lot. But, you know, most of your really successful bands, the bass player is actually pretty heavily involved.
Yeah.
Either, you know, lyrically or just, you know, just writing the music. You know, they fill in that space. You know, they keep the drummer in line, if you will, you know, from a musical standpoint.
Yeah.
He's good. And I was glad to hear that. So, you know, he took the name from the ancient Celtic New Year, you know, so, you know, kind of getting more into that, like you were saying, you know, that occult, you know, type of thing.
And it's actually not pronounced Samhain. It's just easier for me to say it that way. I would just rather say it that way.
I think that's the rest of the world, myself included.
Yes.
I often mispronounce things on this show either because it's just an impossible word or, you know, it's just easier. You know, damn it.
You know, when I remember when they came out and seeing t-shirts and some albums and some of the record stores and I really didn't know what they were about.
Right.
You know, being a naive, you know, farm town kid, I was like, wow, that stuff's really scary. I wonder what it is. And when I finally got a chance to listen to it, I was like, yeah, this is exactly what I thought it was, you know.
So do you think that for you personally, was that a moment in your life that kind of, you know, where things changed?
Oh, absolutely.
From a whoa.
Wow. This is, you know, and I don't normally buy into music and being satanic and things like that. That's whatever you want to interpret it. But to me, it made me look at the music in a lot different way. I didn't want to go out and, you know, kill animals or anything, but I really liked the feeling I got from the music. You could almost, when you would listen to it, it would, like anything with a lot of people, the music would take you to a certain place. And
absolutely,
his music would do it. And like I said, going back to the drums, the drums are so heavy and tribal, and there was a lot of just long, almost howls. There's a song called The Howl that's got a really good, long, carrying on track that I just think is one of the best ones that he's ever done.
Yeah, the music change that you've experienced here, I mean, they're kind of combining horror punk and gothic death rock, and this is where I think, in my opinion, the heavy metal influence starts to come in more. Maybe that's Erie Vaughn bringing that to the table. You know, but you're right. You know, even Glenn himself began to introduce more complicated drum patterns like you're talking about on The Howl. So, you know, I think Glenn as a musician is going, all right, let's, you know, what else can I do? What's next? What's out there? You know, and then, you know, you hook up with a guy like Erie Vaughn, I mean, because he hung out with that dude for a long time. Yeah,
long
so
time.
You know, you need those other types of people to almost bring you to a point where you don't know you can get to, but you need their help getting there.
And it helps too, I think, when a lot of people have other backgrounds and artistic backgrounds, because Iri Vaughan was a very, very talented artist. He did a lot. His paintings are very, very incredible. And so, you take a guy who's that type of an artist that can carry that over and express it in a way and playing and bring it on to Glenn, I think was huge.
Yeah, and I'm going to fast forward a little bit here before we play a Samhain track. And one of the things that sticks out to me is this could end all debates, in my opinion. Danzig metal, not metal kind of thing. I would definitely at least put Samhain in the metal category, especially considering.
Now, where else would you put it? Where else could you stick it? That's what I'm curious.
And that's
because I can go Misfits, death punk, you know, but I'm trying to figure out where you would stick that band.
In my opinion, that's the sign of a good band. When you can't put them somewhere, they just are. That's like Gojira. I talk about Gojira a lot on the show, and they don't fit any of the typical subgenres of heavy metal. They're just Gojira. To me, that's you did well if you can't be put in the box.
Yeah. At the time, I was trying to figure out what they were because you couldn't. It just didn't fit anywhere.
Well, speaking of metal influence, Rick Rubin, super producer, head of Def American, way back. He actually saw them perform in 1986 at the New Music Seminar on the advice of Metallica bass player Cliff Burton. Cliff and the other guys from Metallica too, but the Bay Area, what would become the Bay Area thrash scene. A lot of those guys were into punk, into hardcore. They weren't necessarily into the classic heavy metal. They were, but they had different ways of seeing the world. And Cliff was like, "Hey man, you should go check this band out." And if Rick Rubin goes to check your band out, look out. Probably some very good things are about to happen in your life to the point, Danzig has even credited both Cliff and James Hetfield from Metallica with helping raise awareness about his music.
Absolutely. You look at a lot of the early Metallica photo shoots and early concerts. There's always a grim skull on somebody's battle vest. That's always there.
Once again, I read earlier today from Sound of the Beast in that Glenn in particular was kind of the catalyst for Metallica to give up on the bullet belts and
the spiked stuff. Yeah.
And they went to cut off black shirts and black jeans and when they developed that was more of a Danzig influence.
Because they were really jeany. A lot of jean material during that early times.
Yeah, so Danzig.
I don't think I've ever seen Glenn in jeans unless they were black.
Right.
No
such thing as blue jeans. Yeah. It's black jeans. So Glenn meets James at a Black Flag gig of all things, and so they kind of became friends. They bump into each other on the road. James and Cliff, would spread the word about Danzig and Misfits, blah blah blah. So Glenn definitely gives a big tip of the cap to the guys in Metallica from the early days and helping him get to where he's at. And I think that alone to me says a lot about why I think you got to call Samhain metal.
Yeah, I would. I mean, Metallica, whatever your feelings with Metallica are, Metallica's Metallica. They're metal.
Oh, absolutely.
Look at the name. The name's metal.
The big four thrash metal.
So if they're calling it, I gotta coincide with it. Yes, it is.
Well, I'm going to give you your pick. You got a hat trick of Samhain songs here. What do you want? They're all good.
I know they are, and I'm dying right now trying to pick it out. I got to do the howl because you know what? Sometimes I hear that in my head when I'm out in the woods riding my bike.
I love it. Here's The Howl by Samhain.
Oh!
Welcome back to the Metal Jukebox on PodcastDetroit.com. That was The Howl by Sam Hain. If I'm not mistaken, that was off the – is it Initium? Initium? How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, I think it's I always thought it was Initium, but, you know.
Whatever it is, it's whatever, a good record.
Yeah, it's really good. It is. And that one was kind of an odd album. It was really hard to find. It took me forever. I think I had to drive to Clawson to – Flipside Records.
Well, I will tell you where you will not find it. You will not find any Sam Hain on iTunes.
Well, that's good.
Boy, you are holding on, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
It's okay, man.
Have you seen my hair?
Well, you got that nickname for a reason. I haven't seen that reason in a long time, but okay. I still can't let that go. I do love that. So in 1987, after two albums and an EP, Sam Hain was signed to a major label by Rick Rubin. So, you know, here we go. Sign of great things to come. At that time, the name of the band was changed to Danzig. And I always wonder, oh, God, why'd they do that? So I think it depends on who you ask, who you talk to, who you get the news from. But, you know, some will say it was, to allow the band to retain its name in the event of lineup changes. Maybe that's a euphemism for, you know, hey, we don't like you guys, get the fuck out.
Or maybe it's just Glenn, I want to take control of this
right,
shit. Right,
exactly.
I'm going to rock it out the way I want to do.
Yeah, that might have been a polite way of saying that. Yeah. And, you know, as Danzig would discuss the reason behind the change, he says, Rick Rubin convinced me it was the way to go and would also provide me with a lot of more artistic freedom after all. I was now in charge of where we were going musically, so if I didn't want to do something, it was a lot easier to say so. So I think you're right. You know, I think that was a – you know, call it ego, call it what you will, but when you're the mastermind and you've got your plan, that's – I guess that's the easiest way to achieve it, right?
You know, and I back in the day when that band first came together, when Danzig, that first summer, there again, it was late 80s and when I first heard it. Not that I didn't. It seems so different than Sam Hain. I'm like, well, wait a second. Where's this bluesy rhythm going now? Because it kind of had a bluesy tone to it. It was nothing
absolutely
like Sam Hain was. It was completely different. And I didn't really buy into it right away. But then as he went into the next album, what is it? Was it Lucifuge, was the next album.
Yep.
It definitely – then I think I saw him on tour three or four times during that. I didn't even travel to Cleveland to see him.
Because even after that, you know, three, dance four, and the sound changed on every single record.
Them,
and I think that was on purpose. You know, to the point why I think that is I think at one time – Danzig's intention was for each album he recorded to consist of a different recording lineup. So he intentionally wanted to work with different guys on each record, which to me makes perfect sense of why each record would have a different sound.
It's got to be really hard for an artist like that because, you know, especially when you're popular for what you're already doing and then to take that step, probably a real fine line not to go too far one way.
Sure.
He was able to go to the next level but not make it so different that he lost the original followers. Because at that time when he was touring, I had seen him on all the same albums, and it was the same people. Like, you know, you go to those concerts, you see those same people.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That original lineup was pretty killer. I mean, obviously you got Glenn.
I got a really good Danzig story for you really quick.
Okay, go.
It's a real quick Danzig story. I saw him at the Latin Quarters for Lucifuge.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
Corrosion of Conformity opened up, and then it was Soundgarden and Danzig. So I think Jake's mother was there. We were there with my brother, and we were drinking some beer, and it was a good time, man. We had put down many pitchers, and Corrosion and Conformity was on, and they were playing a Black Sabbath song. I went to get some beer. I come back, and Soundgarden is sitting at my table with my brother and my girlfriend drinking beer.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, I didn't realize it was Soundgarden. I'm like, who are these dudes? My brother's like, you guys got to get out of here, man. This is our beer. Because the place was elbow to asshole there.
Right.
And it looked like it was falling.
That was a small place.
That place looked like it was falling down even then. I think it was like 1990. And so I kicked them out of the chair, you know, their chairs, and I go, who the hell were those dudes? He goes, that was a band that was just up on stage. I'm like, wow, never even, you know. And that was kind of before Soundgarden, the grunge thing, had really launched.
They weren't big at that time.
Yeah, they weren't. Yeah, and it was Chris Cornell. I'm like, hey, who are these dudes? Get out of here,
Cornell.
Man. Get out of here.
Spoon man, take a hike, asshole.
Take a hike. Take your grunge with you. It hasn't even started.
That is a very good story. Thanks for sharing that. The original lineup, you know, for quote-unquote Danzig, now the band, not the man, you've got, you know, John Christ. Holy jeez.
Why was the guy – is that his real name?
I never looked into it.
It just didn't seem right. I kind of fell for that when it came out. Like, is this dude's really named Christ? I mean, he's hanging out with the most satanic, like, figure at that time, you know.
Oh, like Erie Vaughn. I mean, is that his real name? Yeah,
that's a cool fucking name.
It is a cool name. I like that one a lot. You know,
I would have considered naming him that.
Yeah. And I even questioned this one, Chuck Biscuits.
Yeah, what a dope.
That kind of all sounds like a made-up name.
It is kind of a made-up name. And Chuck was kind of – he's kind of dopey.
He is
dopey.
He
could beat the Skins like nobody's business.
His time in Black Flag might have been one of my favorite eras for Black Flag. You know, obviously there's a lot of guys in and out of Black Flag. But, you know, I thought Chuck was one of the better
guys. I like who he credited his drummers that he looked up to.
Who's that?
Keith Moon was one.
Oh, God,
and
who
Stuart Copeland.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Which was really, you know, you look at that guy and where he can't, you know, he's a punk rocker. But, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Who?
Well, the Police were, I mean, they were kind of a punk band early on.
Yeah.
You know, and then they refined and became more, I guess, accessible to the masses. Yeah. But I tell you what, I got the opportunity to see Stuart Copeland play in a side project called Oysterhead with Les Claypool and Trey Anastasio from Phish. And son of a bitch, that guy can play drums.
Yeah.
And that's very entertaining to watch. So that was cool. 1987 saw Danzig owing to his association with Rubin. He was asked to write a song for Roy Orbison.
Yeah. From a really good movie, too.
Right.
Yes, that movie's a killer movie.
Who knew?
Yeah.
I was taken back away from it. I mean, because of Roy Orbison.
If you've never heard that song, you need to listen to it at some point.
That was Life Fades Away, right?
Yeah.
And that was in the movie Less Than Zero.
He also did the other song called Less Than Zero. Roy Orbison actually did Life Fades Away. He wrote that. So Roy performed Life Fades Away, but Glenn does Less Than Zero.
Yeah, I did a little more digging into that Roy Orbison tune. And I guess Danzig had originally been asked to write the song for a female vocalist.
Who?
But,
do you know who?
No, because Rubin was unable to find one suitable.
Well, who would you have found back then?
Yeah, I know. That's been somebody from
the Go-Go's.
Right.
I like the Go-Go's, but I'm not going to throw
them. I'll admit that, right? So, but it's funny because you know what ended up becoming the song that he does is credited to Glenn Danzig and the Power and Fury Orchestra, which actually featured the same members of the initial lineup of Danzig, minus Erie Vaughn, because for some reason it wasn't jiving with him how Rubin wanted him to play the bass. So he said, "Nah, man, I'm sitting this one out."
All right. Fair enough.
I guess he's standing up to his musical standards,
yeah,
if that's how he feels about it. Right. I'm not gonna argue with the guy. But I guess while we're talking about him, why don't we play that track? This is Glenn Danzig and the Power and Fury Orches. You and Me, Less Than Zero.
Got to
Welcome back to the Metal Jukebox on PodcastDetroit.com. That was something extremely different, probably the most mellow song I will ever play on this show, but goddammit, it's good. Especially when you got a voice like that. I think Glenn's vocals really lend to the pleasantness of that song.
It does. It does. You actually can appreciate his voice is really good. You know, it had a, to me, I felt a very, and I don't want to compare him to Elvis, but it had a very Elvis Hawaii feel to it, you know, the
swing, yeah,
the flow of the song, his voice, and the way it picked up at the end, the rhythmatic.
I liked the backing vocals,
yes,
you know, the female vocals there at the end as well.
Yeah, you almost could close your eyes and picture him on stage in that Elvis-like feeling.
You know? So there you go. He's not just some evil dude associated with Satan like a lot of people want to pin him into. I mean, look what he could do. He got on a soundtrack, for God's sake, of an extremely popular movie.
It drives me nuts when people pin him on that.
Yeah.
He's just out, like, picking up cat litter and stuff for his cats in that haunted house. You know, I mean, why that poor thing?
Cat litter.
You know, guy can't own pets.
So progressing down his timeline, so, you know, Danzig gets the original Danzig record release. It showed progression from, you know, that gothic death rock sound that Sam Hain was doing to, like you mentioned earlier, a slower, heavier, more blues based heavy metal sound. And then with each Danzig record, you know, that continued to change. He takes a little break in 92 and says, guess what, I'm putting out a classical record, and that bitch debuted at number one, like we talked about with Black Araya. I still can't believe that. I mean, goodness gracious.
I can't believe they let it happen. You know, I mean, okay, so it is good music, but actually they're going to let that happen?
Right, right.
Yeah.
I think, too, with the progression of the Danzig records, you really saw Glenn kind of bring out his own personal influence from Black Sabbath. You know, because as a fan of music himself, you know, he draws from others, and you can hear a lot about all of that in there as well. You know, and he had other influences, obviously, you know, the Doors, like we've talked about, Jim Morrison. But
there's one particular track, and I think I do see it on the playlist tonight. You will definitely, if you play it, you'll definitely hear a Jim Morrison tone in the beginning of it. It's more when he's really slow, is the slow part of the song, and maybe we can pick up on that later.
All right. Well, we are closing in towards the end of the show, so I do want to get some more Danzig out there. Which song is that you want to play?
Anything.
Anything. And if I'm not mistaken, hang on now, I've got it right here. Anything was off of Danzig 3, How the Gods Kill. Perhaps my favorite Danzig record.
It's a good one.
It's not too shabby. I am very particular to the Demon Sweat, the live record that he put out. I thought that was good, including the studio material.
I figured you'd be good on that Demon Sweat. And that's, you know, when it started getting to the point for me with that, not that I lost interest in it, I was still being that holdout guy. You know, I was
right?
still trying to go back to, you know, I have a real hard time moving forward. In fact, that, you know, you're talking to a guy who didn't discover hair metal until 5 years ago.
That's true.
I knew it was there,
right?
But I really didn't want to admit I liked it. So.
Well, good enough. We'll talk about that while you listen to Anything by Danzig.
Anything you want, anything the world has to offer, I can give you if you just reach out to me, take my hand. Everything a kiss cannot bring, I will give you if you just say you will. And it's freedom in my home, and it's freedom in my heart, in my arm, in my arm, in my arms, yeah! anything you want. Send my arms, anything you need. Send my arms, anything you want. Send my arms, anything you need. It's out!
Welcome back to the Metal Jukebox on PodcastDetroit.com. That was Anything by Danzig. That was a very good choice. I'm glad you chose that one.
I like it because your heart rate starts at about 48 beats. Right. And by the time you're done, it's like 195 beats. And
you just get there,
all
right?
All you just want to do is just thrash stuff and push things out of the way.
Well, speaking of thrash and stuff and you and having you on here, I know you're a fan of covers.
Love covers.
The Metal Jukebox would not be complete without actually playing a thrash metal song. So I got a little treat here for you. Metallica, huge fans of Danzig and all of his work. They've covered quite a bit of it. I want to play Last Caress, Green Hell. Here we go.
I got something to say. I kill your baby today. Doesn't matter much to me. We'll be right back.
fire this off.
This is a previously recorded episode.